Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Obviously, front lawns are a terrible idea. I mean, Hank, what do all of these front lawns have in common? No one is using them! They're just sitting there sucking 4 billion gallons of drinking water every frackin' day! Also, in order to maintain this completely unnatural plant monoculture, we use 70 million pounds of pesticides every year on our grass. Grass which, I will remind you, does not feed us! I'm sorry, Hank, but it is very hot, and just like characters in Victorian novels, the temperature reflects my temperament. 70 million pounds of pesticides a year, it's ridiculous, and the most ridiculous part is that I'm out there with them, trying to make sure that my grass looks okay so my neighbors don't get mad at me. Now, I think there are some advantages to lawns. Grass turns carbon dioxide into oxygen, although it's hardly the most efficient carbon sink. And there's some soil erosion benefits, although we'd all be better off if we had like a big mix of plants in our front yard. And we'd be better off still if we had vegetable gardens. So how did we end up with the disaster that is the front lawn? The British. That's right, Hank. We threw off their colonial yoke and said no to taxation without representation, but they got us on the lawns.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Alsip Home and Nursery, offering the best of every season since 1969. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. And by Birchold's Floral Gift and Garden Center. Get green, let's get growing. He's a legendary, charismatic megafauna in his own mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Are we all set here?
Go.
And we're off. Oh, isn't today the Indianapolis 500?
That too.
Have you ever wondered how much carbon they spill into the air just running around that racetrack for 500 miles each?
I think those are all hybrid vehicles now.
Are they? No, they're solar, aren't they?
I'm pretty sure.
I think they do. It's totally solar. You know, yeah. Can you imagine hybrid? We've cut down the speeds a little bit. We've decided that we'll top out at about 34 miles an hour, but that works for us.
Because it'd be quite a race. It would take quite a long time.
That's true. It would take a while, wouldn't it? That's Rob Carthol. We've relegated him to the booth. He's you're stuck in the booth the rest of your life now. You realize that, dude.
That's all right. It's cozy in here.
I know it is. And you know what? You always just turn off the sound. You don't have to listen to me at all. You could be like Robbie on Saturday playing her video games during Mighty House. Oops. Did I just bust her? Oops. I don't know. I've sat next to her during the show. And you know, and speaking of that, I'm glad I brought that up. See, stream of consciousness does work sometimes. And that is because next Saturday at 8:30 a.m. Will be episode 3 of Dig in Chicago. My television show with the lovely and effervescent Jennifer Brennan. which airs 8:30s on the U2 channel, 26.2 here in the Chicago area. You can also go online to mydiginchicago.com. And it's episode 3, and it stars Ron Cowgill from WCPT's Mighty House on Saturday mornings from 8 to 11 a.m. Ron came out to my community garden, Green on McLean, and I have a story to tell about that. Gosh, it just happened last week, and it feels like it was years ago. So Ron comes out, and he helps us put our rain barrels up, which, as you know, Rob, is a cool thing. We ganged together 5 rain barrels. I donated one to the cause, and somebody else donated another one. And then we got 3 rain barrels via a grant, which I believe came through Openlands, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
So I have 5 rain barrels there, and we wanted to put them all together. Now, the building next to our community garden is very, very tall, and at one point in the front, where the downspout comes to the ground, there is no downspout, or there was no downspout. So we thought, okay, this is a great place to hook up rain barrels there. The water is just pouring out from the gutters anyway. We'll put in the downspout and direct it to the rain. Actually, put a splitter on so we can go to the ground or it can go to the rain barrel. So we put the downspout up. Ron comes out. Cowgill comes out, and he puts the gutter or the downspout up there, climbs all the way up the ladder. I don't even know how he did it because it's like 3 stories tall, and that would scare the heck out of me. And he puts that up, and then we set up the rain barrels, and then we taped it for Dig in Chicago. And basically, as we're taping it for Dig in Chicago, the guy next door, the guy who owns the house we're attaching the gutter to, for free, putting a downspout on his house because there's been no downspout for years, and the water's just sort of been pouring out of the gutter, says, my wife doesn't want the rain barrels there. Okay, where do you want the rain barrel? Put them towards the back because they just thought that they were not pretty. Now, I think rain barrels are cool. But so we, so we had to go to the back of the house and now break into the downspout, and that's what Cowgill, so Cowgill comes back and he does that, and we put the downspouts there connected to the rain barrel. So he comes in and he hooks up the rain barrels. So actually, when you watch the episode next week on Dig in Chicago, that is the original location. We ended up putting them in the back, so we had to move all those. So he hooks them up, and he did a very clever thing where he took splitters, faucet splitters, and screwed them into the bottom of the rain barrel, the faucets at the bottom of the rain barrel, and then took hose and cut it up, and it has this thing where you can create, you know, I don't even know the terminology for it. What's the end of the hose? Do you know what it's called? Nope.
End?
There's got to be a term. I have no idea what the terminology is. Maybe somebody will tell me, 773-763-9278, or post it on Twitter or Facebook for us. Anyway, so we connect all the rain barrels at the bottom. Because what Marcus de la Fleur, who's been on this program, he's an environmentalist, and he's retrofitting a number of homes to be sustainable, told me, he says, if you gang up water barrels at the top, then you have 5 containers. If you gang them at the bottom, you have 1 container, because then all the water goes into each of them. They fill up at the same time, which is very, very cool. So we connect them all. And we're ready to go. And a rainfall comes, and it fills up the first barrel. Here's a problem. And this is like a month ago. Ron didn't realize that the rain barrel from the valve from the first rain barrel wasn't open. So the water fills up the first rain barrel, but it didn't fill up any of the others. So we lose the opportunity to fill up all the rain barrels. And so I go out there and I open the valve, and of course, the way physics works, all the rain barrels fill up with about the same amount of water. So it was like a foot or so or a couple of feet in each rain barrel instead of them being full. And then we used up that, and then it didn't rain for about 3 weeks. You probably knew that because you work in a community garden. You were probably fairly cognizant of the fact that we hadn't had any rain. Right, Rob?
Yeah, but we're catching up.
I know, we're catching up now. But the point was, at the time we needed this water, we had not five rain barrels full of it. We just had one. And we used that all up. I mean, we used all of it. And so we were waiting for the next rain event. Well, that happened last week. And this time I'm ready. I got the rain barrels, and I got they're hooked up. The valves are open. I come home one night. It's the forecast is rain. I go back out to check the rain barrels, just to make sure everything is hooked up properly. And it is. And I go home. And then about 11 o'clock that night, I'm lying awake in bed and thinking, wait a second, did I leave a valve open? Okay, let me go back. And Kathleen's there and she says, no, you went out earlier. It's my turn. And, you know, mom and pop community garden here. Okay. So Kathleen goes out. And it starts to rain, and there's lightning, and it just starting to come down in buckets. And she comes back into the house. She goes, Michael, one of the rain barrels blew over. Well, apparently when the storm hit, because the rain barrel was empty, next time we put a brick on the top. See, these are things you learn as you go along.
As you go, yeah.
Yes.
Trial and error.
It's trial and error. And or put some sort of, you know, bracing around it, whatever. But we figured a full rain barrel doesn't need anything to keep it from blowing over, but this wasn't full. It was empty. So the thing blows over, and I run out there, and she says, oh, by the way, I can't, and then one of the valves came apart. So I run out there, and the hose between the two rain barrels is off and down on the ground, and I realize it's broken. When the rain barrel fell over, it broke the valve connecting, or the connector connecting the two rain barrels. So I'm standing there holding the thing together with my hands in the pouring rain and lightning. It's something out of Caddyshack.
Sounds like Back to the Future.
It is. Well, yeah, it is. It was a combination of Caddyshack and Back to the Future. And here I am. And then Kathleen comes out and she's going, well, what can we do? I said, get me a rag. Well, let's see if we can tie this together. And it's pouring rain and we're soaked to the skin. It's 11 o'clock at night and it's dark and we're out there trying to make the rain barrels work. And she brings a rag, and I'm wrapping and wrapping, and every time I wrap, it falls off. And I wrap it, and it falls off. And then I said, I'm going to try one more time. And I found a way to wrap it so that I wrapped it around the other side of the Y. And it's hard to explain unless I showed you on TV or something. But I got it to hold. And I got the hose to hold, and so the water's pouring from the first rain barrel into all the others. And we look at each other, and we say, this isn't going to hold until morning. Doesn't matter. We're soaked. We're going in. We'll get up the next day and go out and check, and holy smokes, it held. It held, and the rain barrels are all full.
Way to go.
Yeah, it's like emergency. It was triage. Triage in the middle of the night. Gosh, we made it work. But this is, as you said, trial and error. When you got a community garden, somebody's got to be the one on the front lines, right? There's always got to be an emergency, right?
There's always an emergency.
There's always an emergency. Garden. Well, speaking of that, that's one of the things we're going to talk about on the show today. We've got Billy Burdett, who's with Advocates for Urban Agriculture in Chicago, and we're going to talk about the state of urban agriculture in Chicago. It's a lot more sophisticated than me holding hoses together to fill up rain barrels. I can guarantee you that. Sarah Batka is on her way, but in her stead, we have. Oh, look at that. She's turning on her old mic, too.
I think it went on all by itself.
I did, but oh. I could see. I could turn it off, but now you could turn it back on by yourself, see? And there you go.
There I go. So you're controlling me.
A new part of it. Yeah, that's the whole goal.
Okay. As long as we're clear.
I manipulate everybody in the studio. Haven't you seen my little Mariette hands here? Marionette, rather. And that is Carol Brewer, who's a new part of the team. Kind of. We're figuring this out. But welcome.
Good morning.
I know Carol through the Chicago Recycling Coalition, and for some darn reason she wants to learn about radio.
I do.
What's that all about? That's just crazy. That is just crazy. But thank you. And she's working the Facebook, we got the Twitter action going with Rob. And Sarah, I know you're on your way and you'll be here soon, and that's great. Second hour should be really fun. My buddy Michelle Hoffman, and I can't believe it's been 4 years since she's been in the studio. She's part of the faculty at all kinds of places, including the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And she's bringing in Megan Isaacs. Well, they're coming in together. And they're going to talk about, I don't know, climate change and ending the consumption of fossil fuels and disinvesting and what students are doing in Chicago to work on these issues. So I'm very happy to have that. Megan is a student at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago also, and she's part of the Chicago Youth Climate Coalition and SAIC for the Future. And, of course, SAIC stands for School of the Art Institute of Chicago. Rick DeMaio weather, we're going to recap the tornadoes and why it's so cool, which I'm sorry, kids. I know all of you are whining, and I can tell because I see the weather forecasts on TV and the annoying anchor people who just complain about how cool the weather is. And I say, you know, get over it. When it's 100 degrees, you're going to be griping and moaning about that, too. So there you go. All right. In just a second, we will have Billy Burdett from Advocates for Urban Agriculture. But there are still 2 days left in Berchtold's Garden Center Memorial Day Get Green Weekend. And those are today and tomorrow even. And Berchtold's is celebrating this holiday by giving you 20% off on veggies, herbs, fruit trees, and berries, all tropical fruit trees, all Dr. Earth fertilizers and soils, Bonide Garden Natural Products, Orkin Beneficial Insects, and select items in the flower shop. And while you're there, take a look at the full line of natural and organic curatives and amendments that Berchtold's offers. The organic products in the garden center are distinctly highlighted on the shelves by images of their green mascots, Greener the Green Lacewing and Mr. and Mrs. Gusto the Green Pepper. And while you're there, pull manager Wally Schmidtke, a.k.a. Dr. Wally, aside, and you might want to ask him to give you some of his tremendous tomato tips, because he's really good at growing tomatoes, and he will tell you everything you need to know. In fact, he'll talk about what's happening to your tomatoes because it's so cool right now. I actually covered mine the other night when I thought we might be getting close to a frost. Now, obviously, we didn't get close to it in the city, really, but just to be safe, you know. I covered my tomatoes. I just didn't want them to sulk on me. Berchtold's Garden Center is located at 434 East Devon Avenue in Elk Grove Village, just west of O'Hare Airport. Look for the iconic windmill out front. Or go to Berchtold'sGardenCenter.com, B-E-R-T-H-O-L-D-S, GardenCenter.com. Berchtold's, get green, let's get growing.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
And then your announcer says, here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Scab and rust diseases are caused by fungi that invade crabapple, apple, hawthorn, common pear, and other ornamental plants in the rose family. Scab and rust rarely kill their hosts. However, if ornamental trees such as crab apples or hawthorns are severely infected by these diseases, the ornamental value of the plants may be lost. The fungi that cause scab and rust diseases attack new growth on the host plants, especially in early spring. Foliage, twigs, flowers, and fruit are susceptible to attack. Scab fungi overwinter on fallen leaves, fruit, and infected twigs. Their spores are released on cool, moist days in early spring when the host plants are beginning to leaf out. And if it's one thing we've had, it's been cool and moist this spring. For help on controlling these diseases, contact the certified arborist at the Care of Trees. Now, I want you to call this new number. You should write this down right now. Call them for a free consultation, and that word is free. F-R-E-E. Here's the number, 800-508-9466. 800-508-9466. See, Carol's already writing it down. See, I love it when people pay attention to me. This is a good thing, Carol.
I am paying attention.
If you call today to the Care of Trees, leave a message and your call will be returned tomorrow to set up an appointment with one of their certified arborists. They promise to do that. Call the Care of Trees today, 800-508-9466, or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
It takes a lot of hard work and know-how to install a rooftop garden on Lakeshore Drive. You might even need a 120-ton crane. That's how Christy Weber Landscapes hauled trees, soil, stone, and planters up to the amenity decks at 500 North Lakeshore Drive last week. Check out the updates on their Facebook page. When it comes to landscaping, Christy Weber has the crews and experience to make sure that any job gets done right. Whether you're greening Chicago's skyline or looking to pretty up your parkway or backyard, maybe you don't need a landscaper, but you're looking to give your own green thumb some exercise. Stop by Christy Weber Farm and Garden Center at 2200 West Grand Avenue in Chicago and find just about anything you'd need to create your own lush urban paradise. Sign up for one of their free workshops. There's that word again, free workshops while you're there. And you can find out by going to their Facebook page. And you can work on improving your own knowledge and experience. Visit their webpage at ChristyWeber.com and like them on Facebook to receive updates and specials. Christy Weber Landscapes, right in your own backyard. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let's immediately go to the phone lines and bring in Billy Burdett. Billy, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks. Great to be here.
It's
how are you today?
I'm terrific. I had a kind of almost tragedy on the way in. Not tragedy, just a catastrophe. But I escaped it, and I'm not going to even talk about it because I am moving forward. Okay. I'm glad to have you here. Billy Burdett is coordinator for AUA, or Advocates for Urban Agriculture. And a few weeks ago, you gave a presentation called The State of Urban Agriculture in Chicago. Where did you give that, by the way?
I gave that at the Midwest Urban Farmers Summit, which took place actually in March, over at the plant Chicago, mm-hmm. In the back of yards.
Right. Area. Love the plant. Have had the folks on from the plant. Have had John Adel on and Blake Davis. In fact, Blake, we should mention, Blake's doing his talk this Tuesday. Rob, I think you noted that it is the 50-year survival plan for climate change. And Billy, he was on the show in January of this year and talked about that. It was pretty amazing to listen to him. I mean, if you believe it, this is not hyperbole. It changed my life. It really changed the way I look at things and the urgency of which we have to act. And we'll be talking about that in the second hour too, because I know there's a march against the Keystone XL pipeline, happening in Chicago on Wednesday. I'm going to bring that up. I think we need to talk a little bit about the march against Monsanto that happened yesterday all over the planet, which is a pretty amazing thing. In fact, if anybody marched against Monsanto and wants to call in and talk about that, 773-763-9278, I'd be really interested in your thoughts and observations. But back to you, Billy. I interrupted you there. So, you know, how does one characterize what's going on in Chicago in terms of urban agriculture? Because there's so darn much.
Yeah, that was kind of the challenge of putting that presentation together and trying to wrap it all into less than an hour, because there really is just an incredible variety of projects happening across the city. So many new things on the horizon, really big projects that people are working on, and also developments in terms of policy and support from local government. If I were to sum it all up, the state of urban agriculture in Chicago right now, I would say that it's very strong. It's probably at its most vibrant point since the Victory Garden movement back during World War II, when about 40% of the nation's produce was being produced by backyard gardens and community gardens. There's just an incredible amount of interest. We keep on seeing new people joining our organization each year, more people coming to events that we host, and new urban agriculture projects of all kinds popping up across the city. So, for me, being the coordinator of this organization, which works to act as a hub for the urban agriculture community, it's really a bit of a challenge just keeping track of everything that's going on.
I guess that leads me to the question I should have asked at the outset, which is exactly what is Advocates for Urban Agriculture. I'm a member, and I know that you guys do a lot of good, but in a nutshell, you know, you are a coalition of organizations and individuals, and basically anybody can join who's interested in the subject of urban agriculture growing in the city. But as coordinator, what do you find yourself doing?
Well, a lot of coordination between a lot of different projects.
Silly me.
So we have, I guess you would say, three main areas of work. Like you said, we're a coalition of organizations and individuals. And what we try to pull together is just really anybody who is interested in growing more food in the city, who sees the value of expanding and strengthening this movement, all of the benefits that come along with that, from economic benefits, health benefits, environmental, beautification of the city. It's really an amazing movement in the fact that it addresses so many issues that are out there right now. But going back to what we do, we serve as sort of an urban craft. A craft is a collaborative regional alliance for farmer training. There is a local craft for Northern Illinois and Southwestern Wisconsin, that is run through the Angelic Organic Learning Center, and they hold workshops and farmer trainings throughout the year. So what we're trying to do is be an urban version of that, because obviously there are lots of specific issues for growing food in the city as opposed to growing food in a more rural setting. And one of the big challenges that we're seeing right now is there's huge demand growing every year for hyper-local food, food that's grown right here, you know, within a few square miles. And despite all of these really great projects popping up all over the place, there really isn't right now a mechanism for an effective mechanism anyway for meeting that demand. So one of the things that we're kind of working on big picture in the long term is to provide that resource and create some standards and best practices and make connections that make it a lot more possible for food to be grown in the city and for it to meet that demand. Go ahead.
No, well, I'm just going to say you're trying to meet a demand that by growing food in the city, and this is not a traditional model because this is something that we basically have not done with the rise of the large cities in America. I was going to ask you how much can the urban farms, urban gardens contribute to the food of America? You mentioned the 40% or so during the Victory Gardens. You know, that was because of World War II. We're in mm-hmm. another war right now, which right. I don't know, you name it. It's, you know, the battle to save our environment, I think, is a huge war. Do we have the potential to reach that level again?
Absolutely. I think that we can go far beyond that level at this point. There are all sorts of really exciting techniques for growing pretty much throughout the entire year here in this region. We're, zone, I can't remember what zone we're in right
now. Well, we're 5-6. We're in the area we run everything from about 4B to 6A, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of all over the place. We're taking our tomato starts out and bringing them back in.
Oh my goodness!
Over and over again throughout this month, but So
well, let me ask you about that. Where have you been doing that? What farm or garden have you been working with that's been moving the tomatoes in and out?
I myself have a few different projects that I'm working on. My partner and I were fortunate enough to connect with a garden lot right next door to our apartment in Bucktown, where we met the owner, finally tracked him down after getting fed up with the rat situation next door, because it had just become completely overgrown and crazy. And we worked out an arrangement where we would keep it from becoming a public nuisance or continuing to be a public nuisance. In turn, we'd be able to grow food there for ourselves and family and friends and neighbors. In addition to that, I started up a school garden program at a preschool up on the north side, Smart Love Preschool. And we have a greenhouse and grow throughout the year and get the kids involved in all sorts of really exciting ways.
You know what? Billy, so. And what you highlight there is what I have observed. It's people like you. You know, there are the growing powers out there. There's the growing homes. There's the Windy City Harvest and the larger operations. And those some of those are real business models and growing concerns that, you know, the Rahm Emanuel and Growing Power announced the formation of an accelerator farm in Chicago. Mm-hmm. They're trying to train farmers there. But and that's great, and I love that. We need farmers in the city, and we need to train them. But what I'm finding out right now is that there are people like you, like me, like Rob Carthall here in the studio, and we work in two or three different projects, and we do it in our spare time whenever we can. I mean, you're also working with AUA, but the point is you pick several different places, and you give as much as you can. Is that a sustainable model, or do we need to go to the more professional model?
Well, I think it has to be a combination of all this. I mean, you're always going to have people who are just really passionate and probably stretch themselves a little bit too thin. That's definitely a common thread, I would think, across not just the urban agriculture community, but a lot of progressive-minded, green-minded individuals. There's just so much to do. And so I think that that's always going to continue. But I do think that it's really important to expand it beyond that, beyond, you know, us diehard.
Right.
No, I
totally get it. I mean, it's only so much that only so far that volunteerism will take you. And and there has to be a financial aspect of this. There has to be the reward for it, because people need to make livings. You know, you just can't do this forever, because there's that burnout factor. I learned that by doing not-for-profit theater in Chicago for about 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, Billy, hang on a second. I got to take care of some business. We're talking to Billy Burdett, who is the coordinator for Advocates for Urban Agriculture. We will be right back with him. Meanwhile, here's a question for you. Will planting a red bud improve your chances of winning the lottery? Heck, will planting cauliflower or broccoli? The answer is probably not. But planting a red bud or planting vegetables will definitely add beauty to your life. That's the philosophy of Platt Hill Nursery in Bloomingdale and Carpentersville. And if it's not a tree you want, but spring annuals, as I said, how about vegetables? But getting back to spring annuals, if they got a selection for you, Gomphrena, Calibrachoas. Did you know that hummingbirds love them? And speaking of hummingbirds, they have soup petunias, including trailing types, sun coleus, bacopas, even pink and blue bacopas, diamond frost euphorbia, which makes a great house plant in winter. Take it indoors. I learned that by talking to Michael at the staff at Platt Hill. And more. Here's some advice from Platt Hill himself. He's kind of old school. He says, remember your grandmother and plant a peony. that's not bad advice. And they have a lot of tried and true plants, as well as everything else you need for your garden, at both locations. Platt Hill Nurseries on Randall Road, just 3 miles north of I-90, and on Lake Street, US 20, just 3 miles of I-355. Go to Platt Hill Nursery, P-L-A-T-T, Hill Nursery, .com, or like them on Facebook. Platt Hill is a proud sponsor of Dig In Chicago.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
If deer and rabbits are noshing on your garden goodies, remember what you used to say in junior high school? Don't go away, mad. Just go away. Very high junior high schoolish, don't you think? Protect your stash with the all-natural go-away deer and rabbit repellent from Bonide. Go-away liquid is available in both concentrate and ready-to-use formulations and can be applied directly to your plants you want to protect for up to 45 days. Apply go-away liquid directly to vegetables and fruit for protection up to the day of harvest, and go-away granules can be used around all gardens to protect against marauding animal pests, and it's effective for up to 2 months. Look for go-away deer and rabbit repellent products at these fine retailers. Kelly Seed in Peoria, Illinois. Big R Stores, all locations. Growing Grounds in Bloomington, Illinois. Or visit Bonide.com to locate a retailer near you. Don't forget to download the free Bonide Problem Solver app for your iPhone or Droid.
I'm Jennifer Brennan, the smart one.
And I'm Mike Novak, the pretty one.
We're the co-hosts of Dig In Chicago,
Chicago Television's only local gardening and cooking show.
And we're thrilled to be back for our second season offering gardening tips and tours.
Plus local chefs and local dishes.
Saturday mornings at 8:30.
And this year we're on the U2 channel, 26.2.
See you there. I've got to go check the soil temperatures.
Does this pancake make my face look fat?
Here's a way to celebrate the day before Memorial Day. Make a trip to the Garden Center. That was once again voted first place for the best garden nursery store in Northwest Indiana and in Illinois, too, in the Times of Northwest Indiana Best of Region voting. Of course, I'm talking about Allsip Home and Nursery in St. John, Indiana, and Frankfort, Illinois. They have a fabulous selection of annuals and perennials in their expansive greenhouses, veggies as well. Allsip even grows a lot of their own plants in their Kingsbury Acres facilities, and they've teamed up with some of the best flower growers in the country to offer an even wider variety of plants to choose from. That includes Allsip's famous geraniums, their own hardy, high-performing hybrids that draw discriminating gardeners from across the Midwest. Go to AllsipNursery.com to join their A-list preferred customer program. It's free, and you'll be able to take advantage of their A-list only sales events, exclusive A-list pricing on selected items, advanced notification of new items and product arrivals, and special A-list member events and seminars. Go to Allsip, A-L-S-I-P, AllsipNursery.com. This is indeed the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're talking to Billy Burdett, who's coordinator for Advocates for Urban Agriculture. Billy, you still with me there?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, as we wrap up here, I just want to give you an opportunity to tell folks how they can get involved and what you might have coming up that folks might be interested in.
Okay, great. First thing to do is to go to our website, which is auachicago.org.
But I have it up on my website. If you go to MikeNovak.net, this week's show, the link is there to AUA. The link is there to your resource guide, which is really cool because it's got a lot of great information, too. So that's there.
Yes. Yeah. So it's a great resource. It has a resource guide with, you know, lots of information, everything from how-tos for starting a community garden or where to find materials for your own residential garden. And it's something that's constantly growing all the time. It has a jobs page with job and volunteer opportunities in the urban agriculture area for Chicago and beyond. Lots of upcoming events, not just AUA events, but also other urban agriculture-related events. So it's a great place to connect, and it also will connect you to our Google group. It's right there on the front page. You can't miss the link, and that's really great because that has over 1,300 Chicago area subscribers who, have collectively hundreds and hundreds of years of urban agriculture experience and know-how. So it's a really great place to connect with the community, connect with exciting projects going on, and informational resources. So we encourage everybody to join that Google group, to regularly check our website, and also to become members of AUA. Membership is completely free, but it just shows that we have, people across the city who support what we're doing, is expanding and strengthening urban agriculture across the city. And we also encourage people to get involved as volunteers. We're an all-volunteer organization, except for me, and I'm just a half-time employee, so I've got my work cut out for me. But we have a lot of really, really dedicated people, and we need more all the time. Three primary working groups: advocacy, which works on policy issues; connections, which works on outreach, putting together events throughout the year; and resources, which is working on this resource guide, working on a really exciting mapping project that we have going on. We always need help with that. So those are the things to get involved with. We do have a few things coming up. I was hoping to announce an event that we're planning for next or this coming Saturday, a week from today, but that is had to be pushed down the road. So we hope that people regularly check our website and our Google group for announcements about that.
Billy, June. You're teasing me here. See, I thought I was going to have a big scoop here, and and there we go. Oh well. All right, but that's okay. You know, I urge people to join too, because the listserv goes out and there's always amazing announcements and insight from the members of AUA, and I encourage people to be part of that. Billy Burdett, thank you so much for dropping by, and keep me posted on this. Keep all of us posted. You're welcome to be back on the show again.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a great Sunday.
Love the show.
Oh, I appreciate it. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Rick DeMaio, Ricky D, in just 60 seconds. Dr. Earth's Pot of Gold potting soil is 100% organic gardening gold, infused with organic aloe vera gel to keep your plants hydrated. Use Dr. Earth's Pot of Gold potting soil in indoors and outdoor containers as a soil amendment and for mulching and seed cover. For more on Dr. Earth, a leader in ethical organics, go to drearth.com, where you can find an independent dealer near you and connect with them on Facebook and Twitter for organic updates.
Bonnie knows when you plant something, it keeps on giving. Growing from friend to neighbor to community. Generations of gardeners have trusted Bonnie for fresh, healthy vegetable and herb plants. Rely on Bonnie for quality plants, help, and support. Bonnie, gardening with you since 1918. BonniePlants.com.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. I'm not sure. I got Ricky's phone line there. Make sure. Sorry about that. I thought I had it. Let's see here. Oh, what did I do? Did I lose him there? Are you calling him again, Rob? Sorry about that, kids. I had Ricky D there, and I managed to hit the wrong button. And there he is. He's talking to him. We're connecting. We understand that we're going to have, is he, oops. Oh, okay. Well, we understand that W.C. Turk is going to give us a little report on the march against Monsanto at the top of the 10 o'clock hour. So stick around for that. I know what you guys should know about. It doesn't matter how cool the temperatures are today. If you're a gardener, you know that Memorial Day marks the official start of the gardening season in Chicago for many, which means it might be time to grab a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, especially if you're looking for inspiration. You might recognize an organization that is featured in one of the May-June issue stories, the WPPC, otherwise known as the Wildflower Preservation and Propagation Committee. You might remember that I did a broadcast several weeks ago from their native plant sale at McHenry County College. Despite their unwieldy name, I love those people. WPPC does a wonderful job promoting natives in our backyards and natural areas. They also have a great mentoring program that you can read up, and it's mentoring native gardens in your backyard. You can read up on it in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. There's also a story about Robert Steinbach, who has been teaching biology, botany, zoology, and environmental biology at Elgin Community College for 45 years, and who has learned that fish and plants can keep pond water just as clean as filters and chemicals. Then there's my column on the inside back page. There's nothing clear about that bit of writing. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. There's the guy, Rick DeMaio. Sorry about that, dude. I think I accidentally hung up on you.
Oh, that's okay. You know, just I think of you as like an old girlfriend, right?
Ow.
Minus the accidentally stuff, right?
Right. I accidentally hung up on you.
Yeah, Mike, but that's the problem with cell phone. When, you know, when kids these days have, you know, conversations where the boy gets mad at the girl gets mad at the boy, they can't slam the phone down like you and I used to. You take your finger and you swipe it.
No, what you do is you throw your phone into the lake is what you do.
No, I don't want to do that.
No.
A happy decoration day, as my grandpa used to say.
Yeah, exactly. And this used to be when it was on the 30th. At one point, they actually did holidays on the actual date, like they do the 4th, like the 4th of July and Christmas. But my dad was born on the 30th of May. So,
oh, was he really?
Yeah. So he always got his birthday off from work.
Wow. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah. Then I think it was Richard Nixon who changed it, right?
It might have been. I'm not sure. You know, it's all part of that conspiracy to put every holiday on a Monday.
That's not a bad idea because it's all 3-day weekends, right?
You know what? Whatever. I don't really have a strong opinion about it.
Yeah. Speaking of Monday, boy, last Monday was one day for the record books, wasn't it? Like,
oh my goodness! Yikes! Yeah. Now, okay, now I got
it. What's amazing about it? I was talking to a friend of mine who's also a ex-teacher of mine, and it was the current director, believe it or not, of the Severe Storms Prediction Center down in Norman, Oklahoma. His name is Dr. Russ Schneider. And Russ is in charge of the agency that issues all of the severe thunderstorm and tornado watches, as well as what's called the convective outlooks and the mesoscale discussions that the local offices then use to obviously, you know, issue warnings. And while this whole event was going on last Monday, the Storm Prediction Center, which is located in Norman, was obviously near the epicenter of this F5 tornado, and the tornado missed his house by only 3 miles. So while he's there watching the storm unfold, he's also thinking, okay, it's also getting close to my house. And think about what some of these forecasters down there had to deal with, is not only thinking about putting out warnings, but wondering, you know, whether or not their kid's school was going to get hit, whether or not their wife was in the middle of getting, you know, the kids to and from practice. But, you know, Mike, in a sense, the fact that this was an F5 tornado that moved through not a, quote, densely populated area, but a populated area, and the fact that 24 people died, you have to say it's almost a silent victory when you consider the F5 that moved through Joplin a couple of years ago killed 160.
Yeah.
24 fatalities is, you hate to say one is too many, but it's so much better than what was earlier reported as 51 or 91.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right about that. And here's the sad part about it. I sent you an article about this. And others have been reading about it. The sequestration is cutting back on our ability to monitor the weather properly. I mean, our satellites are collapsing in space. We're furloughing people. Mm-hmm. You know, and lives are at stake here. And we got these idiots in the Congress who you know, they need their airplanes, they need to their flights in and out of Washington. You know, I just want to whoop them up the side of the head.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, Mike, and I'm not going to say that, you know, anything that happened with the sequestration was directly related to what happened with Moore, but two of the people that I work with on my master's thesis emailed me and said, by the way, we just had our funding cut because the stuff that they were doing was not, quote, looked at as needed at the time. And, you know, you can kind of look at it in two different ways. Are they producing research that's going to provide a value-added product, or are they producing research just for the sake of producing research? So, you know, these are tough questions to have to ask. And unfortunately, the people who are most likely, you know, getting, you know, the short end of the stick are the people who, you never know, end up finding something interesting by doing something that in the end they didn't really know what they were looking for in the beginning. And that may sound like an odd thing, but even Dr. Charles David Keeling, when he first put, you know, sensors on top of Mauna Loa to look at, you know, the carbon dioxide levels of the atmosphere, he didn't really know anything other than his hypothesis that it'll probably go up and it'll probably go down during certain times of the year. And sure enough, two years later, he made one of the most interesting scientific discoveries, you know, of the last 50 years. And now everybody talks about the Keeling curve and how it's related to, you know, the potential of, you know, human-induced warming. So you never know where the research is going to go. But the bottom line is, yeah, it's a shame that some of those cuts did happen, and it's a shame that they'll probably not get reinstalled after they get cut.
Yeah, that's the crime. It's not that there's two crimes here. They got cut, and as you said, will they get reinstated? You know, and you can't, you can only go, our bridges are collapsing, our satellites are falling out of the sky. You know, what's going to happen is we're going to have an F5 come through town, and nobody will get a warning. And do you think that then finally people will understand that it's necessary to pay attention to science and have the people available to get the word out?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know if it's going to go to that extreme, because one thing, I know we only have a couple of minutes left here, is one thing I was interested
in. Hello. Oh, okay. That's
now, even before the tornado hit, they had helicopters from TV stations looking for it. There's not many places in the United States that do that. So,
I'll tell you what. It's all right.
It'd be nice to walk outside and go, wow, it's going to be like this all day long. But
Rick,
this is probably the best weather that we're going to have for the rest of the weekend or the next 24 to 36 hours. Sunshine now, clouds picking up this afternoon, high about 65 today. Rain arrives tonight. It looks like much of tomorrow looks to be a wet Memorial Day. And believe it or not, Mike, this time last year, instead of a high of 65 today, we were 95 last year.
Wow.
Last year's weekend's weather was 30 degrees warmer.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Alsip Home and Nursery, offering the best of every season since 1969. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. And by Birchold's Floral Gift and Garden Center. Get green, let's get growing. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
One day, my bad when I come around. Says he's sorry, then he puts me out. I got a big chain around my neck, and I'm broken down like a train wreck. Well, it's over. I know it, but I can't let go.
Welcome back. We're trying to get a hold of Rick DeMaio again. Obviously, we were having technical difficulties there. He couldn't hear me at all. And what I was trying to tell him, I was going to say, Rick, hang on. Let's get that forecast after the top of the news, because we had issues there, and I wanted to get back to him and also give him a chance to talk a little bit, because I know that this week starts the official hurricane season. So we got tornadoes, we got hurricanes, and we got weather. We got your normal weather, and Rob is attempting to track him down right now. In the meantime, however, Have you got him there, Rob? All right. And I hope this is Rick DeMaio. Are you there?
I'm here. Part two, Mike.
And I apologize. I know.
No, that's fine. I understand. Those things happen.
We had issues. You couldn't hear me because I was trying to get you to hold up so that we could.
No. I got everything. Yeah, I figured it all out.
You figured it out finally. You know, your buddy is here in the studio.
Who's that? I got lots of buddies.
Okay, whoa.
Well, let's play Name That Voice, Rick. Let's see if you can recognize who this is talking to you.
Oh, my God. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Rick. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you? So you finally wiggled your way into the Mike Novak studio, huh?
Well, you know, I'm aspiring to your level of celebrity, Rick.
Oh, God, you got to stop calling me that.
You are, Rick. And you know what? And I'm glad she's here. And I'm glad you're still on the phone. And we got you back because you introduced me to Michelle.
Mm-hmm, and yeah. Michelle is probably one of the most energetic people I've ever met, and has an affection and love for the science of the ocean. More so, I put it this way, Mike: if I was a student right now in college, I would probably try to take any class that Michelle teaches, without a doubt.
And she's teaching in a lot of places.
Yeah. She's trying to keep up with me, I think.
I know.
That's right, Rick. That's right. You set the bar high.
She always says, I don't know how you do it. I go, I just do it.
You know, and you brought her in, and you came into the studio with her, and I can't believe it was almost 4 years ago.
Was it that long ago?
Yeah, when we were on the South Side in Pulaski.
Wow.
Yeah, I looked at it and I went, holy smoke, 4 years. And it's one of the few times you actually came into the studio because you wanted to introduce me to Michelle.
Right.
When you were both teaching at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And she's here today, and we're going to talk climate change and other, and her new film, Microcosm. If you go to my website, my website, I've got the link to it, to the Kickstarter, which... And Michelle's reached the goal, but you know, I'm telling people, keep giving money. Just let's pile on now, because this is a great project. We'll talk about that in a second.
And it's a film that's still in progress, isn't that right, Michelle?
That's right. We're actually just getting started.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it sounds to me like it's a labor of love. And Michelle is probably the type of person, like a lot like you and a lot like myself and other people with, you know, scientific minds, that you wake up in the middle of the night, Michelle, and you go, this is what I could do. And you next thing you know, you're tossing and turning. Your husband's like, will you stop thinking about the damn movie and get back to bed?
You know me so well.
So that's exactly what happened. And your husband is probably listening right now, is going, oh my God, he knows that.
And he's probably asleep because this is the only piece he gets. So.
Oh God.
So I've got you back here. And I know that you were talking as you wrapped up there about the torn. I have to ask you a question about the F5 in Moore, and you need to know that Kathleen's brother survived the F5 in 1999.
Oh my God!
He was in the bathtub with his wife and his dog, and
oh my God!
And he looked up and he could see the sky because it had just taken the roof of his house off.
He was one of the lucky ones.
He was, and he moved to Norman. He got out of Moore, and I think it's a good thing because he's in Norman, Oklahoma right now.
So went from the south side to the north side of the Tornado Alley.
Whatever. But, yeah. You know, I feel sorry for those people. I saw an interview with a guy yesterday who survived both of them in Moore. And you sent me a chart this week that showed the paths of the three major tornadoes that hit Moore in the last 14 years, and they're eerily...
They crisscrossed.
Yeah, they're just eerily convergent.
Yeah, and people say to me, how can that happen? I said, well, you know, look at South Florida during, you know, the 2004-2005 hurricane season. It was actually one town during the 2005 season. I'm like, now this is one season, not over the span of 14 years. It was one town in South Florida that got hit three times. I think it was Charlie, and then it was Francis, and then it was Jean. That's, you know, just things just tend to happen that way. Now people will say, how can that happen, that tornadoes can go through, you know, a city like that or a town like that of that magnitude, you know, over the span of 14 years? And the only way to describe it is, like, think about Chicago is we'll get hit with, you know, a blizzard maybe once every 5 years. And they say, well, that's not the same thing. No, it's not. It's not an F5 tornado that kills people, but it's a meteorological, physical event that occurs because the atmosphere aligns itself in such a way that a certain geographical area will be more prone to be affected by it than others. And that's where you have to bring it all the way down to science. Now, you got to take the human element out of it. You can say that probably be prior to 1800, who knows, over the last 1800 years, did that area also get hit by F5 tornadoes, you know, once every 10 years? We don't know, but most likely the answer to that is probably yes. So it's all just a matter of meteorology and geography just kind of coming together in the same spot.
That's a really good point, that we're so limited in what we know
right.
about this, and you know, and we're just beginning to under. I heard somebody interviewed on another program during the week, and somebody was trying to draw these conclusions about, you know, tornadoes in general, and the guy said, "We don't even know. You know, we've only known the speeds of these things since 1950s."
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So there's not, we only have 50 or 60 years of knowledge of dealing with these weather things. So
well cataloged and well documented tornadoes have really only begun since about 1950. Prior to that, we just said, okay, it was really bad. And when you look back even prior to 1950, you know, it was almost routine to have a tornado go through an area, you know, and have 150 to 200 people killed. In fact, the tri-state tornado, which went through southern Illinois March 17th, 1925, you know, killed 695 people. A, we didn't have radar. B, we didn't have a storm prediction center. C, the people who were living in homes back then were basically living in, if you want to call it, death traps. These were shanties built out of wood with nails, with no basement, literally no interior closets, no bathrooms with plumbing. So you bring 200-mile-per-hour winds through a neighborhood that's basically built out of shed-like material, you're going to have a lot of fatalities. And unfortunately, a lot of the fatalities that did occur in the Plaza Towers Elementary School, that school did not have a safe room. Almost every school that has now been built since 1999, Mike, now has safe rooms, if not places where children can go. So I would not be surprised that over the next 10 to 15 to 20 to 25 years, the number of people, particularly kids in schools, where you have this concentration of a lot of people in a building, those numbers are going to go down. However, the parts of the equation just continue to go up. We just have more and more people living in areas that didn't live in those areas before. So you may be reducing the fatalities in one area, but you're increasing them in the other. And what you can't keep down is the high cost of rebuilding. This is already a $2 billion tornado. And that's just something that number will never go back.
Well, and unfortunately, part of this equation also, and if you listen to any of the conversations about this, is will certain governments be willing to pony up for those safe rooms? And they say, well, we can't impose big government on our schools. So, you know, I think we should just let the children die.
You know what? I say that's baloney, because any time where you try to impose some sort of a law or a restriction to help the safety and well-being of the public, I think is typically greeted with, like, thank you. Why it would not be is beyond me. But all we're doing is we're trying to say, you know what, in public schools, obviously private schools, they have their own way of dealing with things, but in public schools and public buildings, why not create something like this for the safety and well-being of people? To me, a safe room in a school in Tornado Alley is just like having a fire alarm in any tall building where we need to get people out in a very, very, you know, small amount of time. It provides people another level of security, and that's all we're doing at that point.
All right, we need to keep this fairly short, but
sure.
I want to you mentioned that in communicating with me this week that we're getting into the hurricane season.
Right.
In just a couple of minutes, can
sure.
you tell me what's going on with that?
Well, the Hurricane Center always issues its prediction typically about a week before, seasonal outlook, I should say, about a week before the hurricane season starts calendar-wise, which is June 1st. But we all know from a meteorological standpoint, it really doesn't get going until maybe late August. Their prediction is for above-normal activity. A couple of reasons. The surface waters of the South Atlantic are a little bit above average. There seems to be a lack of any El Nino development, which means that the surface waters of the Pacific in the South Pacific are warm. And that usually, when you have El Nino, you generally tend to have a little bit more of an upper atmospheric wind flow that kind of crosses Central America into the South Atlantic. If you do have that, you tend to shear off the top of storms. Without that, the storms have a better chance of developing. The other thing is also, where are these storms going to end up moving? And the overall atmospheric pattern at the surface is seemingly going towards something where it has more of a landfall type of environment. Whereas last year we had a lot of hurricanes, a lot of tropical storms. Most of them stayed offshore. You ask most people, Mike, was last year an active year? They go, no, it wasn't. We had Sandy, but that was it. Well, if we had Sandy, that means we got all the way to letter S. What happened before that? Most of those storms actually stayed out over the water. So bottom line, above average, we still don't know how that pattern is going to set up. And you really can't look at sea surface temperatures in the spring to get any trends. It's just too early. So I would say that, you know, right now it does look like near or above normal, but right now we don't know exactly when and where. And that's something more, obviously, for people on the coast to worry about.
And as you mentioned Sandy, I'm thinking, well, you can predict all you want all summer long.
Right.
And then something like that hits in October.
Oh, my God.
None of you were prepared for that.
Yeah, that gets into a whole nother question of how climate change and climate variability makes a normal storm become a superstorm, because what happened only 2 weeks after Sandy is they got 8 inches of snow in parts of New Jersey.
All right,
where did that come from?
By the way, those of you listening to the show wondering, Rick DeMaio's on. Lots of weather going on. I brought him back after the first hour, and he's going to wrap up now with a forecast. What do you got for us?
Yeah, you know, the bottom line, Mike, is in parts of western Illinois and northern Iowa, they've seen almost 6 inches of rain in the last 24 hours. So these high, thick clouds that are moving towards us is pretty much the leading edge of that rain. That will not get here until later on tonight. So thickening clouds, 65 inland, 52 along the lakefront, rain after midnight. Much of tomorrow looks to be a wet day. Highs, again, only in the mid-60s, so about 30 degrees cooler than what we had last year during Memorial Day when we hit 95 on this day. And then beginning Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, temperatures generally in the mid-80s. So just when we go back to work, it decides to be more like summer around here.
Well, it is June, and that's what usually happens. Around about June 1st, we get up into the 80s and 90s, and then it kind of stays there.
Yeah, so if you want to install your window air conditioner, I would do it tomorrow because you'll need it by Tuesday night.
All right, or get your fans if you're going to keep the windows
up.
All right, Rick DeMaio, thank you so much. I appreciate the bonus time.
And enjoy your time with Michelle. Michelle, take care. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, bye-bye. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Lots going on. We're going to get a report from C.W. Turk about the March Against Monsanto in a second. We also have in the studio, as you heard, Michelle Hoffman, who's part of the faculty. Now, are you still at Columbia School of the Art Institute and Roosevelt?
I am.
And any others you want to add to that?
No, that does just fine.
That's plenty, right?
That keeps me busy.
Megan Isaacs is here, too. Welcome to the studio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You can pull
me.
That down and talk right into it. Just don't worry about it. It won't break. You can pull it down even lower because there we go.
Okay.
And you brought a friend of yours with you, Francesca. Are you just observing Francesca?
No, she'll be talking with me.
All right. So you guys are both involved in what we're going to be talking about. That is Chicago Youth Climate Coalition and SAIC for the Future and
two student and youth groups that we've been involved with for the past year
and trying to wean us off of fossil fuels, which would be, I think, a really, really good idea. And we start that, and we'll get to that in a second. WC, hold on. I'm going to get right back to you. We'll talk about the march on Monsanto, but also there's a march this week against the Keystone XL pipeline that I think folks should know about, because I think it's a big deal. I think this is a really, really big deal. And we'll talk about that, too. Now, you can depend on Lurby Landscape Supply and Garden Center on Dempster Street in Des Plaines for everything that grows and everything that goes with the gardening season. And the gardening season, well, when we get into the 80s, we're going to be off and running. Lurvy's, a lot of us are already off and running. Lurvy's is one your one-stop shop for getting your garden set up for a beautiful spring, summer, and fall. Whether it's annuals, perennials, hanging baskets, trellises, or one of the most complete lines of natural stone and pavers in the Chicago area, it's all there, along with expert advice and quality service. And right now, Lurvy's is open Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. It's their spring extended hours. They're Saturdays from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sundays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. You could go there right now. And have you joined the Lurvy Garden Club yet? When you sign up for the Lurvy Garden Club, you benefit from exclusive sales and promotions, member-only e-news, the Seasonal Solutions newsletter, and more. I get it because I'm a member. Lurvy's is conveniently located at 2550 East Dempster in Des Plaines, just 1/4 mile east of the Tri-State Tollway, I-294. Go to lurvys.com and don't forget to like them on Facebook. Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center is a proud sponsor of Dig In Chicago.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
I just saw tweet from Celesta 1013. I put my hibiscus outside. Will it survive the cool temperatures? Yeah. Hibiscuses, yeah. They're pretty tough. I've left them. These temps aren't that cool. In fact, the tomato plants I had out there last couple of nights have been fine. It's been cool in the 40s. I don't know what it's been like in the city. Maybe in the city it's been a little higher, maybe around 50. But I haven't had any problems. Have you? Oh, wait, you had frost? Pull that mic over. Oh, my God, Sarah.
Beverly and frost.
You had frost in Beverly when?
2 nights ago.
Okay. So there you go. It depends where you are. In the city, it's not been an issue. You know, I'm Logan Square.
I'm Chicago proper still. I am
you know,
city.
That's true. You are the city. That's true. You know, Beverly, kind of the city. All right. Well, see, good to know. But hibiscus... Generally, so I guess, Celesta, that means where are you? You know, and I think we're past that frost stage tonight. I mean, it's starting to warm up now. It's supposed to be in the 60s today.
Yeah, but I'm going to have a word with Pat Sketch.
Uh-oh, why?
Because a couple weeks ago when you were out, he gave us the all clear, remember?
Ooh.
Yes, he did. Yes, mm-hmm. He did.
Oh, no. Rick, if you're listening, Pat, if you're listening... Ouch. Okay. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Now is the time of year to examine your ash trees for signs of emerald ash borer infestation. The D-shaped emergence holes and S-shaped larval galleries beneath the bark are the most reliable indicators of EAB presence. Other signs include canopy thinning, branch dieback, and even increased woodpecker activity. Trees with moderate to advanced infestations also commonly have trunk sprouts growing from the main trunk and lower scaffold branches. Unfortunately, crown thinning, dieback, and trunk sprouts can be present on ash trees with other problems besides EAB. If you want to talk to a certified arborist at the Care of Trees about EAB or any other issue, I have a new phone number for you. It's 800-508-9466. 800-508-9466. Write it down and call that number for a free consultation. If you call today, and it doesn't have to be just about EAB, it can be about any of your tree problems. And you can call today, leave a message, and they'll call you back tomorrow to set up an appointment with one of their certified arborists. Call the Care of Trees today, 800-508-9466, or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth. as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
It's time for Dr. Wally's Tip of the Week, brought to you by Bertold's Garden Center in Elk Grove Village. Wally isn't a real doctor, mainly because he can't spell bismuth subsalicylate. Everybody know what that is? Anybody? Anybody in the room? Anybody know what bismuth subsalicylate is?
No clue.
No clue? It is Pepto-Bismol. Thank you very much. His veggie tip today is to interplant radishes among your cucumbers. Why? To repel cucumber beetles. You want to do that organically? Here's a way to do it. The larvae and adults also attack asparagus, broad beans, eggplants, potatoes, certain fruit trees, tomatoes, peas, squash, corn, which is a favorite, potatoes, fruits, and melons, and a lot of others. I was reading like cucumber beetles, like something like 279 different crops. Yikes. Now, Cornell plant pathologists recommend scouting plants twice a week, especially when plants have fewer than five leaves, since cucumber beetles like shade examine the undersides of cotyledons, young leaves, and stems. So look underneath, folks. That's the key here. Now, other repellent plants you can plant to help keep the cucumber beetles away are broccoli, calendula, catnip, goldenrod, nasturtiums, rue, and tansy. This is how we interplant crops to help get, keep certain insects at bay. Now, if you want to try marigolds to repel cucumber beetles, use the more pungent varieties like African, French, or Mexican marigolds. The more common marigolds may actually attract them. Oh, boy. Therefore, they could be used as a trap crop. So for more information, go to BertoldsGardenCenter.com or stop in and talk to Dr. Wally. Bertolds, get green. Let's get growing. I remember when I was in junior high and they had this. Actually, I was in high school. I never went to junior high. I went straight to high school. I didn't skip any grades. They just didn't have junior high in my neighborhood. And they would play this on the speakers in the cafeteria when we were at lunch. And everybody would be banging on the table going, doo, 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 boom, doo, 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 and just pounding. And it was like we were in cell block 13 or something. It was really strange. It's the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, as I promised before. And the gals are still in the studio. They're being very patient. We're going to get to them in a second, but I want to get a report from W.C. Turk. How are you doing, W.C.?
Doing very good, Mike, on a beautiful Sunday morning. Actually, I wanted to give you a quick update before we get to Monsanto quickly. I just got back from the U.P., of Michigan along the Lake Superior shore. It's been so cold up there. The trees are barely budding. And when we got back here Wednesday, our garden had exploded. So it was like somebody had thrown down some magic beans in the garden. So something good was going on here.
Well, but it tells you the difference in temperatures in a very short range there if you go to the UP. And it's very cold. It can be very, very cold there. I'm not surprised that they really haven't gotten going yet. Maybe it'll happen this week. I understand that the March Against Monsanto. And the reason I'm doing this is I got I want to thank the folks on Facebook this morning. One of my Facebook posts was, "Hey, aren't you going to do something yesterday's march on Monsanto? And it's like, well, sure.
Those crazy activists holding your feet to the fire.
I know. I hate it when that happens. But one of the things that we found out was that there were protests held in 52 countries, 436 cities worldwide, a total of more than 2 million protesters. Now, there should have been 2 million in the United States alone, but...
Should have been. The Europeans are all over this.
Are they really? In Portland, there were 6,000 protesters, New York City, 2,000, Anchorage, 500, Chicago, 700, Las Vegas, 2,500 protesters. Las Vegas?
Wow, roll the dice on that one, huh?
Oh, where's my rim shot? Okay, never mind. Didn't have it there. In a related note, listen to this, though. On Thursday, the U.S. Senate rejected 71-27 an amendment to the 2013 Farm Bill that would let states require labels on food or beverages made with genetically modified ingredients. Thank you,
absolutely.
U.S. Senate.
And I think that's the key here. I think that's the big key here is if this is really, you know, and for people who want to champion the cause of capitalism, and capitalism is great when, you know, when it benefits the community. But for people who want to really champion unrestrained capitalism, let's put the information on the labels and really let the marketplace decide. That would, to me, would fit the definition of true marketplace capitalism.
Well, that would be a free market, and everybody knows we do not have a free market in America.
An economic oligarchy here.
You know, it's propped up. Our laws are made by corporations, and it's you can't get around it. And I'll be really honest with you, WC. That's one of the reasons that while the march was kind of on my radar, when 700 people show up in Chicago, I got to shrug my shoulders and say, well, you know, where is everybody?
I think that's the key. And there were a lot of good people out yesterday. I moved with them from the Thompson Center over to Buckingham Fountain, where they were hanging out and handing around literature and engaging people in conversation. I ran into on our Facebook page at Revolution and Beer. There was a Mexican family that was out, and they were talking, the Perez family. They were talking about, you know, in the Mexican and the Latino community, there's not a lot of conversation about GMOs. And I think there's probably a lot of reasons for that. But they were out and kind of setting that standard or forging that path a little bit to help get the word out. And it's really about each person sort of getting out there and letting people know what the stakes are for them. You know, I think when people have that information and can get that information, and we saw virtually nothing in any of the mainstream media about the worldwide protests yesterday.
You know, I was really surprised. I was watching NBC, local NBC last night while I was putting the show together. They actually had a story on this, and all I could think of, slow Saturday. They covered the march. How about that?
Yeah.
And it was longer than 5 seconds. It was about 30 seconds. I was simply astonished that it even made the news. And I thought, wow, they were really desperate to fill. So,
absolutely. You know, but from the economic impacts, from the health impacts, from the future of the planet, ecosystems, there are some really profound issues here that need to be discussed. And, you know, 30 seconds maybe is a start.
And I guess that's the point, WC, is that you got to start someplace. I ain't Tom Hartman. I ain't Norman Goldman, who are always like, well, you know, you got to look at the long view and got to stay positive. I'm not the same positive guy as they are. I look at Monsanto and I think, wow, they got the big guns. And unless we get organized, there's There's nothing that's going to happen, and you're never going to see GMOs labeled. And you know, the Supreme Court ruled against the farmer the other week about the Roundup resistant seed, who got it from a grain elevator. And it's just every ruling goes Monsanto's way. I mean, are we and are we going to have, what was the thing that passed in the budget amendment earlier this year that's going to expire in 6 months? But will we even revisit that, or are we going to continue to favor Monsanto in every single way? I don't know.
Yeah. You know, if you're looking to the mainstream media, you're not going to find those groups, those structures, you know, those organizations that do have a structure in place and are really working for something. They just need people's bodies. But they're out there. I know you carry a lot of them on your show. I've seen them on your Facebook, and you know, we do that as well at Revolution and Beer. So it's just a matter of just being persistent and getting out there and getting people the information.
And that's what you got to do. And I appreciate the fact that you were out there, and you're always welcome to come and give me a report on the show. And I got to move on because I got other folks waiting here. So thanks for the report, WC Turk.
Great show as always. Nice to hear from you,
Mike. Give me a beer of the week.
Beer of the week this week is Unibrow's Blanche de Chambly, which is a nice white ale. Rich, comes in a big bottle with a cork on it, so it looks really expensive and exotic. But it's a wonderfully balanced beer. Goes great with whatever you might be grilling this weekend.
And where can people find out about this?
They can get it at Binnie's. They can find it most any place where they find great craft beer.
You know, no. That's the you missed your cue. I was giving you a chance to plug Revolution and Beer, dude.
Well, they can find it at revolutionandbeer.com. just off the top of my head.
Just off the top of your head. And here's what I miss your reports on our town. So I'm thinking, would you call the Reverend Weldon Gaddy and see if you can do the beer reports on State of Belief? Before my show,
I think, and, you know, I think it would be a nice replacement to the Sacramento wine.
Yeah.
Personal opinion.
Personal. All right. Thanks, WC. Say hi to Brian for me.
You well. Say hi to everybody there for us.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
There he goes. WC Turk, of Revolution and Beer. We're going to get to our folks in the studio right after this. How does your garden grow? If you've been listening to my show, I know that you're starting with the healthiest soils and compost, and some of you tell me you're even collecting your own rainwater. Visit the pros at Lake Street Supply for all the materials you need to start building a healthy, sustainable ecosystem in your yard or garden. Tell them your vision of your urban landscape, and they'll provide you with materials and the know-how to get the job done right. Lake Street Supply is also an authorized Unilock dealer. For the best selection in pavers and retaining walls, choose Unilock products. Remember to say happy anniversary. You only got till the end of the month when you visit, and you'll get 20% off, and that's through 31st of May. So act now on any of Lake Street Supply's premium line of Fertrell organic fertilizers and soil amendments. Visit Fertrell.com, F-E-R-T-R-E-L-L.com for product descriptions. Go to LakeStreetSupply.com for hours and directions. My buddies at Lake Street Supply, a thoughtful approach to landscape supply.
Bonnie knows when you plant something, it keeps on giving. Growing from friend to neighbor to community. Generations of gardeners have trusted Bonnie for fresh, healthy vegetable and herb plants. Rely on Bonnie for quality plants, help, and support. Bonnie, gardening with you since 1918. BonniePlants.com.
Looking for a nutritional boost to maximize your harvest or flower's health? Or perhaps you want to maximize your plant's potential at transplant time. Give Dr. Earth's Seaweed Concentrate a try. Dr. Earth's Seaweed Concentrate is a powerful liquid fertilizer that provides optimum levels of potassium and will feed your soil for several weeks, regardless of temperature. So when it's cool like this, you can still use it. With Dr. Earth, seaweed concentrate organic nutrients are available for root absorption on the microscopic level. No GMOs, chicken manure, or sewage sludge. Doctor Your Earth with Dr. Earth, the root of organic integrity. Visit DrEarth.com to find a dealer near you.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
The we people are coming to the growing place. And no, I'm not talking about Sarah Batka. I'm talking about, she's not so wee. She's wee. You're maybe Rob? Is he a wee person? Do we have any wee people around here?
What's that?
You know, little people, like garden fairies and gnomes. Oh my. Saturday and Sunday, June 1st and 2nd are the dates of magical mini garden festivals. On June 1st in Naperville, and on June 2nd, at the Growing Place in Aurora. Miniature fairy and gnome gardening is fun for all ages. Plant a miniature garden with the help of a live fairy. I'm not making this up. This is going to happen. And explore their gardens to find miniature gardens within them. Find them all and win a treat. You can also enjoy fairy food in the fairy dining area. Like I said, I'm not making this up. You can make a crown or a wand for only $5, or make a gnome toad home for only $5. I don't even know what a gnome toad home is for only $5. Or build your own fairy house out of stumps and found materials. Boys and girls will be able to play in child-sized fairy and gnome homes each day, and each location will treat you to different activities. So stop by the Growing Place in Naperville, 25 West 471 Plank Road in Naperville on Saturday, June 1st, or their Aurora location on Sunday, June 2nd at 2000 Montgomery Road in Aurora for the Magical Mini Garden Festivals. Or you can go to thegrowingplace.com for specifics about each day. The Growing Place is a proud sponsor of Dig In Chicago. And the only reason I'm playing this music is to show that I'm hip too, okay? And actually, I'm not hip. I am like so far from hip that it hurts. It sometimes hurts me to be that far from hip. But in the studio, I am very, very pleased to have Michelle Hoffman and Megan Isaacs. And Francesca. Francesca, what's your last name?
Dana is my last name.
Francesca Dana. They are all, well, they're either studying at or teaching at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. We know that Michelle teaches there. Megan, what are you studying? What's your...
I guess socially engaged art slash environmental activism. There's no like sustainability major at our school, but
you can study you know, meteorology, yeah, and other things, right?
Yeah, I choose strategically the classes that I want to take.
Wow!
So they reflect my interests.
And Francesca,
I'm focused in community arts and organizing around like environmental justice and sustainability.
All right, you gotta stop right there. When I was in school, I don't remember, I could be wrong, I don't remember arts having anything to do with the community. I don't remember it having to do with sustainability. What's going on here? And maybe I should ask Michelle, because, you've been doing this a little while anyway. Are there a lot of students who go down this road?
It is staggering, actually, how much momentum this has picked up just in the 16 years that I've been teaching. So I've seen a huge paradigm shift with how people are reacting, and also just the interest that these students have in really using their social messaging and using their voice to be able to promote a betterment culturally, environmentally, all of these things. And it's just not the nuclear education that even I grew up with, where we're studying math over here and science over there and art over there. It's not like that anymore. It really has changed.
Wow. And that's a good thing. So you use your art to communicate with people and show them what they need to get done on this planet. I mean, I come from a background where, you know, I ran a theater company for 10 years in Chicago, and that was our goal. It's like we're going to teach lessons through theater. And it seemed like that made a lot of sense to us. And it still happens, and it happens in literature and so forth. But the idea that you can actually study that in school now is kind of surprising to me. I mean, it shouldn't be surprising to me. I'm just amazed that the two of you are doing that.
Yeah, we're really fortunate that SASU has some really great teachers and classes offered that talk about really sustainability subjects and environmental issues.
And
freedom. Yeah.
Definitely. Freedom. Mm-hmm. Well, that's very, very 70s. Okay. That's very late 60s, early 70s. Freedom. Freedom. Freebird. Freebird.
Where's your Skinner clip?
I get Freebird down here if you want. All right. Tell me about the Chicago Youth Climate Coalition.
So Chicago Youth Climate Coalition is an intercollegiate youth group that has members from schools across Chicago, including SAIC and Columbia College and Roosevelt University, University of Chicago. And basically we meet together on generally a biweekly basis, and talk about just different ways that we can get involved, socially and politically with, making change and, dealing with these huge problems that honestly, like students are going to be, the students right now are going to be most affected by when we're 50 and when we're 60. So in the future.
Yeah. Related to climate change.
Related to climate change.
Yeah. And one of the things that, you're very interested in is something that, and Lisa, Albrecht is not here today. She's off scuba diving somewhere.
Good honor.
Awesome.
I know. You're a scuba diver, aren't you, Michelle? And we'll talk about microcosm in a second here. I'm jealous. Okay, let me just put it that way.
We'll have to get you in the water this
me
year.
Me too.
I will drown.
We don't want that.
No. I can swim, but enough to swim to the life preserver that you throw me. That's what I can do. Do you? I have no center of gravity. Okay, there's no. Have you looked at my shape here? There's just nothing there. Okay, one of the things you guys are interested in is I was mentioning that Lisa and I went to the 350.org rally in Chicago in the fall, and it was as they were launching one of their initiatives, which is fossil free. And the goal of that is to get universities, municipalities, other groups to divest from their engagement with fossil fuel companies. Where do you stand on that at the Art Institute?
Friend, do you want to talk?
Well, we, I think like Bill McKibben has publicized the divestment movement, which is obviously like historical, and there were schools, working on these campaigns before he did his tour. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it was just an opportunity for us to, really bring these conversations to our school about, you know, climate change and our responsibility in that. So we did start a divestment campaign in the fall.
Is anybody listening to you? I mean, if it makes me wonder. Well, you're nodding, Michelle, so say something here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you young ladies actually have made some headway. You've had meetings with some of the decision makers.
I mean, they don't just sit there and roll their eyes and go, okay.
No. Definitely not. They're like fully participating and like really receptive to all of our like advances and our queries. And especially our president, Massey, we've met with him twice since the beginning of last semester. And also the CFO of SAAC's investment committee.
Mm-hmm. Or the museum.
Of the museums, school. Yeah, the museum's investment committee. So we've had multiple meetings with both of them, and they're treating us very seriously. And and this issue very seriously and are now have a goal of pulling together a framework that will then create a socially responsible investment policy mm-hmm. for the school, hopefully by the end of this year.
And I have the good fortune of working with students on different campuses, as you know. And one of the things that I advised them to do before these meetings was to make sure that they went in with a solutions-based approach instead of a laundry list of problems.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that you get much more serious attention when, you know, you don't just come in complaining about something that's broken, but you actually have ideas about what you expect is going mm-hmm. to fix it. And mm-hmm. so that was a real important thing.
And the link to Fossil Free, and by the way, it's gofossilfree.org if you want to find out more about this. Some people are beginning to do this. Santa Monica, City of Santa Monica has divested from fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. The First Unitarian Church mm-hmm. of Salt Lake City. Let's see.
The City of Seattle has made a commitment to divest. Yeah.
And it's got to happen. I mean, I what was it that Rahm Emanuel was working on in terms of what's the noise? Were you drumming over there?
Yeah.
I was like, wow, what's that tin can sound? My feeling is, why don't you just go to City Hall and say to Rahm Emanuel, you want to be a real progressive here? Mm-hmm. Why don't you divest from fossil fuels in the city of Chicago? That would make a statement, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Seattle can do it. Why can't Chicago? I mean, what? Are you a progressive? Are you interested in the environment? I mean, that's the next move. If you want to get your institutions together at all these colleges and universities, get your schools to do it. But, you know, you can walk and chew gum at the same time. You don't have to wait for your schools to do that. You can go to City Hall and demand this.
There's a group that's doing that right now, that's organizing to ask the City of Chicago to divest from fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we can ask Rahm Emanuel to do a lot of things. It doesn't mean he's going to do them.
yeah. But that's one. It's got to be out there. What you have to do is make him answer the question. That's it. That's how that works, is make him answer the question, are you going to do this? And I was trying to remember, it was in connection with something else that Rahm was going to divest himself. He's trying to work out a parking meter deal right now. How about working out a deal with fossil fuel companies and investments there?
Mike, he was trying to replace some of the fleet with fuel-efficient vehicles.
That's good. It's a start.
It's a start. We'll mm-hmm. take it.
It's a start. We'll take what? Yeah, exactly. We'll take whatever you can get. Well, hang on a second, Francesca and Megan and Michelle. Let me do a little of this, and we'll come back, and we have a couple more things to talk about, like the march this Wednesday, whether you guys are going to be part of that. Microcosm, the movie. If you want information on that, we've posted Carol on Facebook, right? We've got something, I think, about Microcosm. It's certainly in this week's show. You can link to it, and we'll talk about that in a second. Now, get rid of those pests, 1, 2, 3, with Bonide's Rose RX 3-in-1 Concentrate. The organic concentrate, and I say organic because that's important, contains the organic insecticide neem oil along with a miticide and fungicide. It attacks all life stages, eggs, larvae, and adults, and knocks out aphids, mites, scale, whitefly, beetles, and leaf rollers. It also prevents and controls black spot, anthracnose, rust, scab, blights, and stops powdery mildew in as little as 24 hours. Bonide's Rose RX is good not only for roses, but all flowers, as well as fruits, nuts, herbs, spices, houseplants, trees, and shrubs. It may be used indoors, and it's easy on beneficial insects, and we love our beneficial insects. Try Rose RX by Bonide. You can find it at these local retailers, Alsip Home and Garden in St. John, Indiana, Hawthorne Gardens in Hawthorne Woods, Illinois, Busy Bee in Glenwood, Illinois, or visit Bonide.com to locate a retailer near you. Be sure to download the free Bonide Problem Solver app to use on your iPhone or Droid.
I'm Jennifer Brennan, the smart one.
And I'm Mike Novak, the pretty one.
We're the co-hosts of Dig In Chicago,
Chicago Television's only local gardening and cooking show.
And we're thrilled to be back for our second season, offering gardening tips and tours.
Plus, local chefs and local dishes.
Saturday mornings at 8:30.
And this year, we're on the U2 channel, 26.2.
See you there. I've got to go check the soil temperatures.
Does this pancake make my face look fat?
You can have a beautiful lawn and be kind to the environment, too. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. A few simple changes in your lawn care practices, like using Milorganite Goof-Proof Organic Fertilizer, can result in a carpet of green safe for your kids and pets. Start by raising the mowing height of your lawn, if you haven't done so already. Taller grass is better able to compete with the weeds. Mow often, removing only one-third of the total height, and leave the clippings on the lawn. Consider using a push or electric mower. It's good for the waistline and the environment. Further improve your lawn's health and greatly reduce weed problems with proper fertilization. Milorganite's organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn your lawn even in hot, dry weather. Plus, you don't need to water it in. And the non-staining iron helps maintain the deep green color even in the heat of summer. So join the professionals and home gardeners who've trusted Milorganite for over 80 years. Use Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com to find a store near you.
There's a lot going on at Alsip Home and Nursery in Frankfort, Illinois, in St. John, Indiana. Yes, they have beautiful, fresh annuals. You can stop by today, get something for Memorial Day, and many of which they grow themselves. There are their trees, shrubs, perennials, roses, and more. But have you taken your four-legged friends to Groomingdale's yet? Groomingdale's is your one-stop pet shop located within Alsip Home and Nursery. They're there Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, and Sundays, 10 to 5, to provide you the best of every season and all of your pet necessities. There's a Groomingdale's Pet Salon in the pet department of both Alsip Home and Nursery locations. Their full-service salon performs all professional bathing and grooming services, including clipping, combing, brushing, nail trimming, and more. Simply select from one of the packages listed at AlsipNursery.com. Alsip Home and Nursery is located in Frankfort, Illinois, on Route 45, just 2 miles south of I-80, and in St. John, Indiana, on Route 41, 4 miles south of Route 30. I'm not even going to do the music because we only got 4 minutes left here. We just got this, handed this into the studio. You know, one of the things that's going on this week, of course, is the fracking vote in Springfield. I advise you to get on the horn and call your state representative and senator and say, no fracking. We want a fracking ban.
No fracking way.
No fracking way. 217-782-2000 on Twitter and Facebook. Write this down, 217-782-2000. That gets you the switchboard where you can get the number for your state rep or senator. Okay, my inside sources tell me that the fracking ban, the moratorium, does not look good. Okay, we're probably going to go with it's probably going to end up being a regulatory bill. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't call. In fact, it gives it even more urgency. To call Springfield and say, "Hey guys, we don't know what we're doing. We're just gonna, you know, I put a link on my MikeNovak.net. There's a story about that. If you go to this week's show, right at the bottom it says the future of fracking in Illinois. Read that story that was in the Trib and what's at stake. There's a lot at stake: our clean air and our clean water. But meanwhile, there's also a march in Chicago on Wednesday, which is to say no to the Keystone XL pipeline. That's another thing that I don't know where Barack Obama's coming from with this. Stop being coy, dude. You know, is what I say to the president. You know what? Just say no to the pipeline. Are you guys going to be there? Are your organizations working on this?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be there. Hey, if our government can take people out with drones, why can't we take a strong stance on an issue like
I know.
This?
Isn't it amazing? It's amazing that we can take people out with drones, but we can't stop a pipeline that's going to despoil our country, as if it hasn't been despoiled already. And it's, you know, game over as far as Mr. Hansen from NASA is concerned. So if you want information on that, I'm sure that Carol and Sarah are tweeting and posting on Facebook. I hope you guys are anyway. We'll get that up. It'll certainly be there. Before we go, though, Michelle, tell me about Microcosm.
I'm so excited about this project, and I hope that your listeners will check out our trailer, which is on Kickstarter. We've got a few days left for our fundraising, and as you mentioned, we've already made it, which is great, but we are just getting started with this film, which is going to be hopefully our new version of Blue Planet, where we're going to look at the ocean through a completely different plane,
through the microscope. And it's the topsoil of the ocean. Your gardeners will understand that.
Very good. That's a good way to put it.
It is.
And so is it at risk?
No, this is going to happen no matter what. Oh, you mean
the
topsoil?
The topsoil of the ocean.
The topsoil's at risk, although I don't want to – we will review some of the issues and the problems, but yeah. I really want this to be about biofuels, and I want this to be about biomedical research, and I want this to be about positive things because this is an incredible untapped resource as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I really want people to appreciate what it is. So we look at the beauty and the biodiversity. We also talk about what it means to the earth, the oxygen production, and climate regulation. And then we also talk about a positive future outlook if we can manage the resource properly.
Okay. Michelle, Francesca, and Megan, thank you so much. Go to my website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show to look for information on the Chicago Youth Climate Coalition and the SAIC for the future. And good luck to all of you. Go green or
go home.
Yo.